Calcio Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the Friday episode of the Calcio Land Podcast. I have to say, this morning, the transfer gods were good to us. Alex and I are recording on Friday morning. Some transfer news came in this morning, so we'll be able to add it to what we have planned. We have an excellent guest, my friend Steve Shavillo, to talk about Roma. They have been kind of one of the teams mainly in the headlines, so we'll talk about them. We'll do our hot transfer topics, of course. We'll have a special part of the pod for our patrons. And because I've been going back to the movies with the summer, we'll have a movie review at the end, which we haven't done in a while. I really enjoyed the movie on Anthony Bourdain. So, Alex, I'm very excited to talk to you. It's a day after your birthday. It's great to still be doing shows with you. Awesome to have seen your rise in recent years. I want to ask you this. This isn't really specific on Belotti, but this is kind of what inspired it. So obviously Belotti has just 1 year left with his with Torino. He's been there the whole time. Ever since we started this podcast, Alex, years ago, we've been talking about Belotti and that crazy exit clause that Torino put on him. So I feel like he's a player we've talked a lot about. But every time Belotti is in the news and there's talk about Torino trying to extend him, Zenit trying to sign him, he's been linked to Roma, some, you know, and previously other big clubs in Italy, I'm always very curious by the reaction, because it seems there's a lot of people that are like, what's wrong with him? Why wouldn't he just leave this club? Well, then on the other hand, I feel like in our society, a lot of times we also value loyalty when I guess it suits us. So I want to ask you this. What do you make in general of players like Belotti, who is, even though he wasn't good at the Euro, is clearly of a higher caliber than Torino and where he's at? What's your take on players that kind of stick around with teams where maybe they've surpassed their value?
Yeah, so it's really tough because unless you hear from the player why they stayed, it's hard to know what their motive was. So like if they stay at a team, like you're saying, a lower table team, despite having better offers to go elsewhere, one may think, okay, they're being really loyal. And if that's the reason, then more power to them. If it's really just that they'd rather be loyal than make a big money move and go to maybe a bigger club that perhaps to them at least lacks authenticity, I love it. I love it if they want to stay loyal like that. But I think the cynic in myself, and I assume many fans, is we could also view it like, well, you want us to believe you're staying loyal, but actually you're afraid to go to that team. You're afraid to get, ooh, the word exposed is hard, but I'll use it, exposed. You're afraid to go to a team that has more of a spotlight on them, where you're also going to have to compete with other players within your own team for playing minutes, and maybe that just scares you and you'd rather remain at a lower table team where you're the guy. Clearly, you've been at this team for a while. You're the guy to the city and to the fans, to just the whole club. So it's kind of a stark contrast, David, because on one hand, you could say, wow, this guy knows he could probably play elsewhere. He's probably tempted to go play elsewhere. But when push comes to shove, he's going to play the loyalty card. But then you can view it once again, like I said, of, wow, you probably want to move. You're just a little afraid. So instead, you want us to believe that it's loyalty that's keeping you there, but maybe it's actually you afraid to take the big leap. So that's what makes this question so difficult to answer, David, is that one looks really nice and the other one looks a little cowardly. Now, I would assume that if it's a player like Belotti, obviously, if you're a Torino fan, you'll know more of the reason as to why he could be staying. And it's definitely a case-by-case basis, and you would hope that it wouldn't be so broad like what I just said. You would hope that if it's a player that's at all noteworthy, you would kind of truly know the reason why they might be staying at their lower table team. But just the only other thing I'll say where I think I can always understand a player is as long as they're not scared of like the higher competition of going to a better team, I totally get why a player just might prioritize playing time, David. I wouldn't even really think it's an ego thing necessarily all the time if they didn't want to go and they wanted to stay and be the man at their current lower table team. I also could just understand, like, maybe they're just somebody who wants to play. They just want to play. And I'll use a great parallel because it's really, really topical. Now, Jack Grealish, it looks like he's about to make this big move to Manchester City, as literally right before we started recording, City have bid £100 million to Aston Villa for him, and that will certainly get it done. I mean, Aston Villa are not going to turn down £100 million. But Grealish, of course, loyal to Villa for a long time. But I could totally understand if a Jack Grealish, maybe not him specifically, but if someone like that was like, man, it's really tempting. It's really, really tempting. But at City, they're going to have Bernardo Silva, and they're going to have Kevin De Bruyne, and they're going to have Gabriel Jesus, and they're going to have Mahrez. And I'm not afraid to compete with them, but then again, I want to play. I want to play. So if another big team comes in for me and they can guarantee me the same role that I have at Villa, I'll do it. But I would understand if a player was like, yeah, I'm not afraid of the competition, but I just want to play. Life is short and I just want to play. So I do understand that side of it. But yeah, David, it's also just a tribalistic thing, right? Like if you're the lower table team that the player chooses to stay at, you are not thinking that they're scared to make the move. You're praising the guy for the loyalty. But let's say if you're the team that wants the player on the lower table team, obviously a fan of the bigger club trying to get that player, and the player eventually says, nah, I'm staying here, you'll probably say, oh, you coward, you were afraid to come to the big team. So it's also totally based on cognitive bias, is it not? I know we've had Andre Cordero on this podcast talk about that. So you could really just view it differently depending on what club you support. So it's a really interesting question, and I think it's kind of a boring way to end it. But David, I do very much think it's a case-by-case basis because you could look at it in two completely different ways. So yeah, that's my take. I'm keen to hear yours.
Yeah, great job. And I'm glad you brought up that interview with Dre. We have to get him back on. That is one of the most brought up interviews that we've done on the show. Yeah, look, you know, I think you hit a lot of things really well because I've heard Totti be both praised for staying at Roma when he could have gone to Real Madrid, gone to any top team in Serie A, and saying, oh, you know, winning the Scudetto at Roma was even a bigger achievement in his career than winning the World Cup. And that means more. And he played for his hometown team, so his career means more because he did that. But then you also hear the exact opposite, like what you described. Oh, he was scared to go to Real Madrid, wanted to stay where he was comfortable, didn't want to compete. So you said it, it's the cognitive bias. I genuinely believe that, you know, most of the time when we're debating an event or something, we aren't really debating the behavior or what happened. We're debating if we like the person or the cause involved. And then based on which side we're on, we're going to use the arguments. And a lot of the times we use the opposite argument to criticize someone. So very well said there. I totally agree with that. Look, with Belotti, and I just chuckle because this is a player that I feel like him, Koulibaly, Alexandra, there are some players that we've been talking about on this podcast for so long, and they're still all at their respective teams. I think, you know, in the first few months, Alex, when we started doing this pod years ago, had you told me that, I wouldn't have believed it, but here we are. So I think Belotti is at a really interesting point now in his career because now he really is in his prime. This contract is going to be the last really big contract of his career. Torino have been paying him well. He certainly has been giving Torino their money's worth. I think him and DePaul were the best players on teams in the battle to avoid relegation, and they almost single-handedly kept their teams up. DePaul did get some help from Musso. Sirigu didn't have a great season. Torino definitely had more talent and a higher payroll than Udinese, but these are the two guys that really kept them going. And DePaul was like, okay, this is my time now. I need to go because I can't stay at Udinese any longer. Kind of sad he didn't go to a Serie A team because we've talked about it on the pod. He literally would have improved all the top teams in Italy, and he goes abroad. So now it's interesting. Belotti, in a lot of ways, is in a similar situation. The difference is, though, you know, I would say Torino and Udinese, although Belotti did not come up through Torino's youth system, Torino really is a special club. Those who really have been following Italian football or really know the history understand that, you know, this was really a historic club. You know, we've had a former Torino player on, my friend Jimmy Fontana, on years ago, and he tried to convey why this club means so much to people. But it goes to show you can use the argument of saying, oh, Belotti, I really respect you for staying here if you like him or if you like Torino. But then it's very easy to turn around and say, well, you're being a coward. You want to be, you know, a big fish in a small pond. And then I like what you said, Alex, a lot of other things, like the unique circumstances of players. I think that's really important. I think we all too often put players like kind of in a, assume it's almost all the same. Like I always think of Berardi, a player who is a really, really interesting, because, you know, his managers have described him literally as a very introverted, shy person who really likes it at Sassuolo because he's very comfortable in his routine. And I know this week we're hearing a lot of mental health with sports, which I think is great. You know, I think that anything that brings awareness to mental health, I'm certainly in favor of. So you're right. It's also very important that we look at the unique circumstances of the players. But again, more than ever this week, what I've realized is a lot of times we're really not debating the behavior or what happens. We're just debating if we like the person or cause. And then we pick the arguments that we have based on that. So, Alex, before we move on to hot transfer topics, I want to ask you this. This isn't so much to make it about Chelsea, but I'm curious about your thoughts on Lukaku in Italy. There were reports that Chelsea this week were willing to make like a huge godfather offer to him, salary-wise, 10 million net a season. You know, there's a big, about a 25% bounce on what he has now. Supposedly a huge godfather offer to him. There again, this isn't coming from Gianluca Fabrizio. This has been in the Italian press. So what do you make of this? Do you think this is kind of maybe a knee-jerk reaction to some of Haaland's recent quotes at Dortmund? Is there like more hope within the Chelsea community of Lukaku coming? Or it seems a lot of the ones that are interacting with me are like, you know, we get it. Lukaku definitely seems genuine in his desire to stay at Inter. We don't get why Chelsea is even continuing to try. So what do you make about specifically this week? What's the buzz been like on that?
Yeah, it's an interesting one because Haaland remains the focus, but really ever since Lukaku made this statement before the Euro started about he's staying, he's still been a subject. Like, it hasn't been fully believed that him saying he's staying was going to be just the end of discussion. And that's because, David, well, you've outlined it in the years we've been doing this podcast. Players saying that about their future doesn't always mean that that's actually going to happen. And honestly, besides someone like Fabrizio Romano, who has been saying he's staying, other credible people have said, don't fully close the book on this. So that's kind of why the conversation has continued. And just the fact that we know Chelsea are going hard after a top striker. And they have had Lukaku as one of their top options. Really, it's been kind of the consensus backup option to Haaland, Lukaku that being. So that's really no disrespect to Lukaku, who obviously is just one of the world's best players, let alone strikers right now. But because Lukaku's at a different stage in his career, and he obviously is so much more, I think, settled and comfortable in Italy than he ever was in England, especially once he got to Manchester United. Like, I think he's genuinely a happier person in Italy rather than the way the English media treats him here. Oh, here, I was going to say here in England, but that's what happens when I feel like I'm so much a part of the Chelsea community. I am in Boston right now. But yeah, I definitely believe Lukaku that even though Conte's gone and yeah, maybe he even knows that the Inter team won't be what they were like last year, I genuinely believe him that he's really happy at Inter. With that said, David, the one thing that's kind of driven the discussion along besides people saying to not close the book on it is the fact that we have heard whispers that if Lukaku was to return to England, it would be Chelsea as he feels like he does have some unfinished business. And I believe that part. I've heard that part credibly. Drogba is always kind of in his ear, it seems. But I guess the report was that Chelsea approached Lukaku and even he turned them down. And I don't really, David, believe the figures put in that report this week. I don't, because it would be a bit weird to me if they already put an offer down for Lukaku, or at least a proposal with figures down, but they haven't for Haaland. So I think it's more that they've been keeping in contact with Lukaku, Lukaku's representatives, however you want to term it, and perhaps they've just been kind of given the signal that he probably won't come, and if he were to come, they would have to really make it worth his while and Inter's while. So maybe the book still isn't fully closed, to be perfectly honest, until literally the window shuts, but I don't think Chelsea fans have had this tangible belief recently that Lukaku is actually coming, because Lukaku now for like over a month has been mentioned in the same way. Don't rule it out. Don't rule it out. Don't rule it out. But never anything more than that. And even though the Haaland one isn't moving the way Chelsea fans would like, it's clear the focus is on Haaland. And Roman Abramovich apparently really wants Haaland. So yeah, but last thing, and I'll just now transition. I want every Serie A fan listening right now to know that because we're mentioning Lukaku as an afterthought to Haaland, that is not an insult to Lukaku whatsoever. Lukaku
I agree.
Is more accomplished in the game so far than Haaland. It's purely just because with Lukaku, if you get him, the resale value is probably not there, right? He plays 3 to 4 years at Chelsea, and then he's going to be 32, 33 years old. It's not going to be the same resale value, which matters to many clubs, especially Marina at Chelsea. With Haaland, there's the fear that he could be a Zlatan type, where he bounces around to a bunch of big teams. But guess what? Then he'd be 23, 24, 25. The resale value on him might be even better, David, than it would be now. That's shocking to even think about. But that's kind of why Lukaku is the fallback option. But with that said, I would, if I was an Inter fan, plan on having him this season. I'd be super excited about it because what a tremendous player he is. So, yeah. That's kind of where
we're at. And I think you said that very well. No, I appreciate what you said. It's not, look, it's not an insult to be the backup option to Haaland at his age, his track record. And the last thing I'll say is I totally get it for Inter fans or any fan. It's annoying when the best player on your team is linked to other teams. I get it. There's a little fear under it. But the flip side to that is I always say it's a great sign when the super rich clubs want your players. You should be concerned when they don't, because that means your team sucks. But I'm with you, and I love what you said, that it's clear that Lukaku's happy in Italy. That was also kind of one of the themes of the opening segment, is like sometimes there's really more to it than that. So well said.
Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, selfishly for the Serie A podcast I do, being this, I'm excited to have Lukaku in Serie A. I think it would have been a huge hit if Inter lost Conte and Lukaku. Like, that really takes the life for an objective like me out of Inter. Not for Inter fans, but for me, it's like, oh, come on, what a hit. Yeah, we got Jose at Roma, and yeah, we got some other fun things going on around the league, but I didn't want Inter to lose two of their more, you know, polarizing characters in Conte and Lukaku. So I'm happy if Lukaku stays. All right, David. So let's keep this whole conversation going transfer-wise, at least, and move on to hot transfer topics. And I just said Roma. Let's start off with this. What do you make of Roma acquiring, and I'm going to give it my best go here, Shomuradov?
Good. We'll go with that. You know, going with me with pronunciations, I should not be anyone's lifeline, but I'm going to go with that, Shomuradov, and that's kind of how I've heard it on TV. So I have a lot of thoughts on this. This is a very interesting transfer. First off, what I really love, the Friedkins, and this is a family that's been in the movie business, they really are great at this, because then the picture emerged of Shomuradov and Mourinho many years ago. It's almost every player linked to Roma. There is some connection to Mourinho. I love it. I think that they are brilliant at this. So let's start with that. It took me a little while to connect how narrative and cinematic everything that they're doing at Roma is. And if you know me, I'm a sucker for that. So kudos to them right off the bat for that. The other thing about this deal is I was shocked that Shomuradov to find out that he was 26 years old. Like, because I had heard about, obviously I watched him in January, I thought he was good when I watched him. Very good dribbler. He's been kind of compared as a poor man Messi. He's been linked to Juve. He's been linked to big clubs. So look, it's not like Roma getting the scrub here by any means. But I was shocked to see that he was 26. And we've been talking so much how in this market, there is no money to be spent. And Roman, I know they're buying him on loan, and it sounds like it's a fourth option to buy. So they're really not putting a lot of money now. But this is a lot of relatively around $20 million next year, plus 10% on the future resale to Genoa. So I feel like Genoa are doing incredibly well here, getting $20 million next year on a player that will be 27. Again, good player. I'm not sure he's going to be a starting caliber player at Roma all the time. Maybe he develops in that and he's a great deal. But I have a feeling he's more of like, you know, kind of like a Sengis Under type, someone that plays fairly often, kind of a hybrid starter back up there. So I think Genoa did really well here, especially because they were also linked to Lammers. Earlier this week, I tweeted, I was like, I just do not get why I don't see anyone trying to get Muriel off Atalanta, which when I think of a lot of top strikers, that would be one that I would try to do. And Lammers, when he played, looked really great on Atalanta. So to me, Genoa, if they move Shomuradov and then bring in Lammers, really, really great job. Because I would say if you told me Roma was getting Lammers, I'd be like, that's a really good deal. Good for them. So there. The other thing, though, is I always say when you see these figures and all, you have to ask yourself, is this happening in a vacuum or is there potential for something else happening? Roma and Genoa have done a lot of deals. I have a feeling before the window closes, Genoa ends up taking one of Roma's players that has a pretty high salary and that they weren't be able to sold. That's just a hunch I have. I could be very wrong, but I'm going to say that between now and when that option to buy vests, Genoa is ending up with an expensive Roma player. So a lot of interesting dynamics here. But again, I liked what I saw from Shomuradov, and we got into it too in the interview with Roma. And I'll highlight this point again. There were a lot of options up front for Genoa last season. So when you look at his stats, remember there was the highly rated Scamacca. I wasn't a huge fan of him. There was Pandev. We had Destro with a big comeback season. So it was a pretty, you know, there was a lot of options there. So I think it's a good addition for Roma, but I think it's a great deal for Genoa. But I have a feeling there's more to come to when I look at those figures.
Mm. Okay. All right, Dave, let's move on to this. Are you optimistic that Frank Kessié will re-sign with Milan?
I would say definitely more than the last time we talked about him, because I think we were talking about how there was really no upside for him being at the Olympics. I was like, I hope not just for Milan's sake, but also for Serie A's sake, that his motivation to be at the Olympics was really to represent his country as opposed to trying to get extra showcase. But look, you know, we've always said take words on transfers with a grain of salt. But Kessié was really very vocal this week on Monday, and it was on Gazzetta dello Sport, the biggest newspaper for sports in Italy, saying, I'm staying, I want to stay, I love the fans, I want to be here long term. I mean, there he really put the ball back in Elliott and Maldini's court, but it also would look bad, especially if Milan, which sounds they are making him a good offer. So they did meet with his agent. Yesterday was their first meeting since March. They didn't get a deal done, but all the reports seem is that everyone's pretty optimistic at some point it'll get resolved. The one thing that I've always said, though, it has to be resolved before Milan starts playing in the Champions League, because if he does that with an expiring contract and does well, a team might really make an offer that no Serie A team can match. So I think Milan are handling this well. It's imperative that they get this done quickly. I'm going to say that I kind of take Kessié at his word almost as much as Lukaku, or maybe just as much as Lukaku. But let's see what happens. I think this him resigning with Milan is not just great news for Milan's fan, which obviously is the most important in this case, but also for Serie A, because we've lost already Donnarumma, Hakimi, DePaul. This would be another really, really tough blow. I don't see Kessié signing on a Bosman with any other Serie A team, especially after those quotes. I think the only way out of those quotes is him saying, look, I really wanted to stay at Milan,
but I got such a better offer from a Premier League team or a big club abroad. I don't see him going back on his words to go to Inter or Juve or a team like that. That I don't. But again, at this point, I would say, I'm not saying I would be totally shocked if he didn't stay at Milan, but my strong expectation is that will be the case.
Okay. All right, let's move on to this one, David. Where do you think Demiral will end up?
Yeah, so this is where the transfer gods came through for us. Because last night, as I was typing up the outline, my answer would have been Atalanta would be my guess. Because Dortmund, who were interested, didn't seem to want to pay a lot of money up front. And I don't blame them. I got to be honest, I think Demiral, probably one of the most overrated players in Serie A right now. He did have some flashes at the beginning, was good at Sassuolo, some flashes at Juve. I have a feeling Juve really regrets not selling him right away, right after the beginning. So I thought that, okay, he'll probably end up at Atalanta. Romero will go to Spurs, which I think is still very likely to happen. Juve is going to get the money that they're owed for Romero, and then they'll send Demiral. Atalanta will make a lot of money on Romero. Juve probably looking back, they're kicking themselves saying, oh, we're only getting 17.5 million. So maybe they do a deal with Demiral where Juve ends up benefiting there. But Atalanta has done a great job. This morning, the report is they are signing Lovato from Verona. And my initial reaction, huh, okay, so this is how they're going to replace Romero. But then you read a subsequent report from Di Marzio that on top of Lovato, they want to sign Luis Felipe from Lazio, another player that played in the back three, and a player that I think most of the time when we think of Lazio, other than Acerbi, nowhere near as good as Acerbi, but the second best player on Fender on Lazio. So it looks like Atalanta is going to end up with Lovato and Luis Felipe, so I don't think they'll get Demiral. So let me just talk briefly on Atalanta. I think they're having a brilliant window. And again, you know, sometimes I catch myself, I'm like, why am I always gushing about them? Because I'm everyone has biases. Obviously, I like Atalanta, but it's really hard not to appreciate what they're doing here. So let's look at the whole deal. It looks like Romero is going to head to Spurs, let's say around 45 million. There's going to be some bonuses. It'll be a substantial fee. So they're going to have to give 17.5 of that to Juve because that's their option to buy. So that leaves them a little bit under 30 million. They're getting Lovato for 11 million, 8 million plus bonuses. Great deal. Lovato in January was valued at 20 million. Granted, if a big club like Milan comes, they're going to be quoted a higher price than Atalanta. Now, look, there's also reason that price went down. And this is something that I'm always conscious of because I'm a big believer. Biases, we see a player for a little bit and we just put him in a box. Lovato got off to a great start, so we put him in the box. Great prospect. This guy is going to be a stud. Second half of the season, Lovato struggled a bit. Like, he had some injuries, but he didn't play as much. So I think there's a reason for that. Maybe he wasn't as great as we made him out to be, but he's certainly a solid prospect. What's really good about this for Atalanta, which to me kind of makes up for the fact he lost some playing time in second half of the season, is Verona run almost the exact same system. Juric was very similar to Gasperini. So they're getting a player who knows that system. And we know how important that is, especially on defense, because they play with that high line and they're pretty aggressive. So I think Lovato, great deal for him, great deal for Atalanta, also great deal for my Padova. Lovato was a homegrown player for Padova. They're getting part of the solidarity payment, and they had also part of the future resale on it. So Padova is going to make pretty good here, close to €1 million. And Serie C, that money goes a long way. So thrilled for that deal. And then Luis Felipe, that's the rest of the money they are investing in Luis Felipe. So that 40, let's say 45 million from Furs, you have 25 total for Lovato and Romero. Luis Felipe valued around 15, 20 million. So they are reinvesting that money, have two players to show for Romero. And then look at the other thing. This is a big transfer fee coming to Serie A that's kind of being going to different teams a little bit. So Lazio's benefiting because they're selling Luis Felipe. Juve's benefiting on the Romero option to buy. So this is another way why you should never look at the transfer window just in a vacuum. You kind of have to look at the fringe benefits. So I'm excited, Alex. This week, for a long time, we didn't have much to chew on with transfers. So I think that we've kind of made up for it a little bit today. So before we get to Steve Chavilla, which we'll get more into Roma, because there's a lot going on there, we'll get to our patrons. So if you enjoy Calcioland, there is a pod on Tuesday just for patrons. We have tiers too, also with articles. We have the transfer rumor raiders that I do with Gabriele Romano. We have some great articles from Enrico Passarella. And we answer all your questions, which is always a lot of fun. I'm very excited to welcome the next guest. This is probably the fourth, fifth time, maybe even more, since I've had the pleasure to chat with Steve Chavilla, who does an outstanding job on a great Roma site called Chiesa di Totti. Those of you that have been following Serie A for a while, I'm sure, are familiar with it. If you haven't, I definitely recommend it. I know a lot of people are interested in hearing what's going to happen with Mourinho at Roma. And Chiesa di Totti is a great place to worship at the altar of the special one. Or if you hope he doesn't do well, you'll get all the information there. So, Steve, it's always a real pleasure to chat with you. Bentornato to Calcioland, my friend.
Thanks for having me back on, David.
All right, so listen, before we get to Mourinho, I have to ask you about the Euro. So I'm going to say this. I have to say, I always was a pretty big Spinazzola fan. I'm not sure I expected him that while healthy, that for him to arguably be the best player on Italy. But then on the flip side, I have to say Cristante, I think, is one of the unsung heroes of this team, because I think what he did was really valuable. And I have to say, I'm like, this looks like maybe a guy that Mourinho is going to really like. So let me ask you, of these two, which of performances at the Euro surprised you more, Spinazzola or Cristante?
Yeah, so in terms of surprise, like the way you framed it, exactly, like going in, I didn't know exactly what Cristante's role would be. I thought he might be a guy, you know, late in matches to spell the midfield, things like that. But his role was bigger than I probably expected. He seems to just be one of those guys that managers just value for different reasons. I remember when De Rossi was playing with him when he first came over, and he said, I'll take, you know, 11 Cristantes any day. I don't care if he's Roman or not. And I think it's just the way he approaches matches that managers and teammates gravitate toward him. We saw the like leadership role he started to take on with Roma a bit toward the end of the season. And even when Spinazzola unfortunately got hurt, he was the first guy over and, you know, kind of consoling him in a way like a captain would. You know, they have the Roma connection, but just that aspect, I think, is valuable. But in terms of surprises, I still have to go with Spinazzola just because he was coming off an injury with Roma. He didn't finish the season. He got hurt during the second Manchester United match when they got, you know, just throttled at Old Trafford. And part of it was the injury they suffered in the first half, him being one of them. And, you know, he just came back to fitness before the tournament. He was arguably Italy's best player, one of the best players in the tournament, still made the you know, top 11, starting 11 of the tournament for the whole thing, even after getting hurt in the quarterfinals. So I think in part, Spinazzola, because, you know, we knew he was good. We knew he had quality. But, man, he's really put it all together. And it's so unfortunate that he got hurt when he did, because it's a big blow for Roma. And it would have been exciting to see what he could have done, you know, in that form under Mourinho, maybe as the fullback that he just kind of allowed to bomb forward, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So speaking of Mourinho, and, you know, it dawned on me, I didn't realize it, that, you know, I didn't make the connections, because the Friedkins obviously come from the movie business. I think they've rolled this out really, really brilliantly from the arrival to so far. So there's been a few friendlies. Mourinho he's been coaching the team. We've heard him talk. So let me just ask you this. What is your impression of Mourinho so far at Roma? Has it surprised you, or was this kind of what you were expecting?
Yeah, I mean, so far so good. Even in the news conference, his first press conference, he kind of hinted at the fact that, you know, it'll take some time, you know, that it's not just like a trophy right now kind of situation at Roma. Like, he's kind of been expected to you know, do at Spurs and United and these places where he fizzled out really fast because the expectations are so high. I think he comes in knowing that this is a chance at kind of redemption for him and for Roma as the club. You know, the friendlies haven't been against anybody so impressive so far. You know, I think they won the first one, you know, 10-0 against like a team that was like a semi-pro team. I don't know if they even like a Serie D team at this point. And, you know, you see like on the ESPN app, you follow Roma, it's like, oh, Mourinho wins his debut 10-0. And you're like, okay, they didn't really play anybody. But they're playing Porto right now. And I've been watching on Roma TV. And, you know, they're up 1-0 in the 75th minute against a pretty decent quality opponent, team that knocked Juve out of the Champions League last year. They played, you know, almost their entire starting 11 minus the midfielders, Vertu, who's injured, and Cristante, and possibly Xhaka if he does arrive, like all the reports indicate. And they look pretty good, fairly aggressive and pressing and things that you'd want from the side, things that maybe they didn't do so much under Fonseca, especially the aggressiveness and the mentality, which I think is important. That's kind of what I hope he builds the most in this team, because there are some quality pieces. And a couple things that surprised me were players like Smalling and Mkhitaryan, who maybe didn't buy into Mourinho during the United days, have bought in a lot more this time around. And even Dzeko, I thought Dzeko was out the window, you know, out the door. And I obviously had issues with Fonseca last year, but, you know, whatever is with Mourinho, the two of them have really seemed to hit it off. And, you know, there's a lot of people who want him gone, but if at this point, depending on the striker market and Roma's financial situation, heck, if you could get, you know, a 15 goal campaign out of Dzeko, you take it in a heartbeat if he really buys into it. So we'll see where that goes. But I think he's creating the right mentality around the team. And that's what I expected from him. And that's what I want the most from him. You know, I don't expect a trophy right away. If he lasts the 3 years, then you'd hope maybe he wins something in those 3 years, maybe a Coppa Italia at least. But I think it's off to the right start.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. Yeah, and I think it's interesting what you said on a Mkhitaryan, because I was like, "Ooh, he's probably out of there," and it seems to have worked out, and we know how important he was last season. So I want to talk to you about the goalkeeper situation, because I find it fascinating. You know, there was a lot made of Milan losing Donnarumma, and Roma previously lost who at the time was maybe the best goalkeeper in the world, in Alisson, and since then it's been pretty hard for Roma. Like, Olsen was a disaster. I still don't know if Pau Lopez was good or not, and I'm curious, maybe now that he's gone, to get your thoughts. I was like, I still don't know if he, like, I would say he's just bang average. But now they have Rui Patricio, who on paper seems to be maybe the best goalkeeper Roma has had since Alisson. So what do you make about Rui Patricio's arrival? And if you had to give a grade from A to F for Pau Lopez's time at Roma, what would that grade be?
Yeah, so like you said, you know, Alisson was arguably the best keeper in the world when Roma sold him to Liverpool, a big reason why they made the Champions League semifinal. And following in his footsteps was going to be tough for anybody, but Olsen, we know, was a complete disaster, cost him the Champions League the following season. And then you're right, Lopez, you know, there were times when you're like, oh my goodness, this guy's a disaster. You know, that mistake he made against Lazio in the derby, kind of like his first season about halfway through the year, kind of seemed to like set him on the wrong course. But then there were moments last season after he came back into the starting 11 where he started to show flashes where like, well, maybe he's not that bad. So I guess if you had to give him a grade, I guess it'd be somewhere in like the C plus range, like you said, like bang average. Could give you a good match, but can also kill you in other matches. And, you know, it wasn't good enough. I don't think it was something Mourinho wanted to deal with. And the thing with him, too, was he was brought in because, you know, Fonseca wanted to play the ball at the back, and his ball playing wasn't that great from the back, which was what surprised me maybe the most, because that's what you kind of figured they would go after when they hired Fonseca and then signed him. But in terms of Patricio, what I'm hoping for is just a solid veteran keeper who makes the saves he's supposed to make, will occasionally stand on his head and make a save here or there that can win you a match. And from what I've seen today, this is the first time I'm watching any of their friendlies. I waited until they played Porto when it was a team, you know, kind of on their level where you could kind of get a better read on the team. He made a couple of really good saves in the first half, which is encouraging. You know, so I'm hoping that he just is an improvement above the last two. He's never going to be Alisson. Very few keepers are. And, you know, I just don't want him to cost Roma games.
Yeah, I'm very curious to see how this Rui Patricio things evolve. So Roma acted very quickly to replace Spinazzola. I was obviously going to be out for a while recovering from an Achilles heel. What have you heard about Vigna, the player that's coming in, based on what you've heard and seen? What's your impression of him, and how much do you think he can help the team?
Yeah, so I obviously have never watched him play for Palmeiras. But, you know, one of the better teams in Brazil. He came through Nacional system, which is one of the two top teams in Uruguay. You know, good football and tradition there in Uruguay. And starts for their national team, which is a very solid defensive national team under Tabárez. They've been that for a long time, and they just relied on, like the Cavani and Suárez to win them matches, you know, 1-0, 2-0 in recent years from what I've seen. And he started for them in the Copa America, and that was a team that only conceded twice the whole Copa until they were eliminated by Argentina. And I actually did some research on him because I have a piece coming out that we're holding until he's actually signed about him replacing, you know, Spinazzola, because he's a 23-year-old, fairly unknown, playing his whole career in South America so far. But it seems like he has pretty decent upside. You know, he's not going to do what Spinazzola does in an attacking sense. Very few left backs can at this point in the world when Spinazzola's on. He's one of those the best at doing what he does. But his defensive ability is rated pretty well from what I've seen in some of the scouting reports. He seems to be more of a balanced fullback, which I think could benefit Rick Karsdorp on the opposite flank. I had a piece come out about Karsdorp a couple of days ago on our site, and how I think that could influence him to be a little more attack-minded like we saw in his Feyenoord days, because now he doesn't have to sit back as much while Spinazzola pushes forward all the time. So it could make Roma more balanced, because they were very left side dependent with Mkhitaryan and Spinazzola last year. So maybe with Zaniolo back on the right wing, teaming with Karsdorp, maybe Vigna's presence balances them a bit. So I'm curious to see what he can do. I think there might be some growing pains coming from Brazil. You know, it's a decent league, but it's not, you know, one of the top five European leagues. So I like it because it's a speculative buy, where if it works out, you might have your left back of the future, or maybe you can flip him in a couple years for, you know, profit if he turns into a good player.
Yeah, for sure. So let's talk about the attack. And again, just know, guys, we're recording this Wednesday because I'll be traveling on Thursday. You guys will hear this on Friday or over the weekend, so some of this may change. So actually, before we started recording, we were talking about the attacking options. As we're recording, Genoa striker Shomuradov looks like the guy who is going to join Roma. They've been linked to a few other names. So what do you make about this addition? It sounds like Zeko is also staying. So what do you make of Shomuradov, what he could possibly bring to Roma? There does seem to be a Mourinho connection. They know each other. So do you think this complements well what Roma has going on up front?
Yeah, it's interesting. It came out of nowhere, like a lot of the things the Friedkins have done so far. But, you know, between the hiring of Pinto, Mourinho, even the Vigna signing kind of came out of nowhere from the rumors. You know, so it shows that they keep things close to the vest as an organization now with the Friedkins in charge. But it seems to be, you know, that Dzeko will still be the starter now. I think this cements that. And Shomuradov will be in the rotation with Mayoral. I think this is kind of one of those things. They bring him on a one-year loan with an obligation to buy. And it can, you know, lead to next year. If he's good enough, maybe he becomes the main striker when Dzeko's done, or, you know, maybe they look elsewhere. I don't know. And then he becomes the number two and Mayoral isn't renewed after his loan is up. But, he scored 8 goals last year in Serie A, which doesn't sound like a lot, but when you look closer, he only played just under 1700 minutes. So, you know, his goals average is just under half a goal per 90 minutes, which isn't terrible. You know, when comparing him with Dzeko, it was actually better than what Dzeko did last year. You know, he was averaging, you know, right around the same per 90 in the league. Shomuradov, when you count his Russian numbers, I'm looking at his numbers, he did play some matches in Russia, so it brings his average down to 0.31. Dzeko was at 0.35 for Roma, so not that far off. But he did come on late for Genoa, which is the encouraging thing. As he got more, you know, acquainted with the league, it seems that he started to improve as the year went on, because when you look at his match log, the goals came late in the season, a lot of them. You know, in the last, like, six or so matches, he scored against Spezia off the bench in a 28-minute appearance, scored against Lazio, 2 against Atalanta, 1 against Cagliari, 1 against Hellas earlier in the season. So he scored against some of the better teams in the league last year, which is encouraging. The 2 against Atalanta late in the season, when Atalanta was still fighting for Champions League and placing and everything, shows that he's got some quality. But again, he's a guy who's 26 and has only played, you know, 31 matches in a top league. So It could turn out to be like, you know, Pinto looks like a genius, or it could turn into another situation where you spent almost 20 million euros on a player who was not that tested. So we'll see. Not who I initially would have wanted Roma to go after. I thought, you know, maybe go after Andrea Belotti because, you know, he could replace Dzeko long term. Yeah. But look, Dzeko is still here. So I guess if you're going to keep Dzeko around and the feeling is good between Dzeko and Mourinho, maybe this is another good signing. I also think Shomurodov gives them a little flexibility. I don't think he necessarily always has to play central, which could be good. Maybe he could rotate in other positions too. Because like I said, you still have Mayoral. So if he's a straight striker, you have three strikers, which I don't think is tenable with Roma's situation, playing only in the Conference League. So it'll be interesting to see how they rotate those players.
I have to say I like this signing. And again, assuming it happens by the time you guys hear it, some things may change or it might be confirmed. Because as you mentioned, you know, he came on late. Genoa's front line was actually crowded last year. People remember yeah. Mattia Destro's return, Scamacca, Pandev. You know, they had some names up front, and obviously they weren't playing outside of Serie A. And look, this is a player that was also linked to Juve and linked to, you know, so I'm kind of intrigued by this one. So the next question is on Zaniolo. Obviously, I don't want to overreact to preseason, but did look really good last Sunday. So it's not just about Roma. I think even Italy fans are really salivating at the thought of getting back Zaniolo. You get both benefits. You get to see him at the club and national team level. So how encouraged are you with Zaniolo so far? And how much do you think he can help Roma in the upcoming season?
No, I mean, so far, physically, he's looked good. You know, just watching him today, he hasn't scored or anything like he did Sunday. He did score that nice goal on Sunday that you mentioned against the Brescian, the Hungarian side, a little bit better opposition today. But physically, he was mixing it up with defenders, running hard. Didn't seem to be, you know, tentative when sprinting or anything, which is encouraging because after those knee injuries, sometimes it takes some time just mentally to get back where you have to be. But he looks hungry. You know, he's a physical presence, which Roma lacked so much last year, I think, in the attack. And just overall, they weren't a very physical team, I think. And under Mourinho's guidance, I think he can really take him to the next level as a professional. So I'm very optimistic. I think he's a great complement when you have Mkhitaryan wide left and you can play him wide right and he can cut in on that left foot. I think, you know, he can give Roma a lot of help up front. You know, when they had trouble breaking down defenses, he's that guy that could just run at defenses that they kind of lacked last year. And from a national team level, yeah, I mean, after the Euros, I was talking to my buddy, you know, saying, imagine, you know, if we get Zaniolo back and you play Chiesa and Zaniolo on the wings at some point when, you know, Insigne is not playing or the, you know, he's the your super sub off the bench, it makes him even more dangerous. So I'm excited. I'm optimistic, you know, cautiously optimistic, I guess, because of the last couple of years with the knee injuries. But I mean, if this kid comes back at 95% of what he was, you know, he can be a player for Roma and Italy for a long time.
For sure. So before we close on me asking you which players you think could surprise people that follow Serie A next season, Roma, I have to ask you about Pellegrini because obviously Roma trying to negotiate a new contract. We know there was that exit clause for fairly low amount, which, you know, I always tell people that really only matters if he wants to leave to have that exit clause that low. So tell me, how important is it for Roma to resign Pellegrini? And what do you see his role being in the future?
Yeah, I think he's very important for Roma. I'm a big fan of his. You know, I think, you know, he has his detractors in Roma circles, but I think people have to get past the fact that he's not Tosi or De Rossi. He's not, you know, those are generational players for Roma. I think he's a very good player. I think he's got a pretty high ceiling. You know, playing in the kind of trequartista role in the 4-2-3-1, I think fits him well, where he has a little bit of freedom to roam. He's also grown as a leader on the pitch for Roma, being the new captain. I think he's, you know, starting to come into his own in a leadership role. And he also works a lot harder defensively than he did early in his career. So I think you could do a lot worse. You know, there are better players out there, sure. But I think, you know, he's someone who wants to be with the club and will fight for the crest. And I think those things are important in a player, you know, especially when you talk about that Roman connection. And I think it's important that he sticks around and is one of the guys, you know, going forward with Zaniolo and Mancini and those kind of guys that seem like they want to be there and build the club around, you know, that core, that early to mid 20s core.
Okay. So Steve, say
someone asked you which Roma player would be good value on Fantasy Calcio, or a player that I can brag to my friends that I'm going to tell him now, look out for him this season, currently a Roma, which player would you pick and why?
Yeah, so it's hard because, you know, a lot of these guys have been here already, so we kind of know what they're about. But the one guy who I think might surprise people, even though he probably shouldn't surprise people, and he might not be, you know, the guy scoring 10, 15 goals and a surprise in that sense, is maybe Cristante as he shifts back to the midfield. Just because he was playing in a defensive role last year, he's kind of undervalued, like I said earlier, kind of everywhere he goes by people outside the club or outside the national team, but managers seem to gravitate toward him in some way. He might not start every match for Roma. He might be their, you know, third midfield in that double pivot that they're going to be playing if they do bring in Xhaka, because they kind of play a similar game from what I've seen. But I think he's going to have a big role in this team, and I think he's a player that Mourinho is really going to like, and I think Mourinho is probably going to be very excited once he comes back from his summer break. You know, other guys that might improve, I would say maybe a Kumbula improves a lot this year under Mourinho's guidance. Maybe, you know, we see a better El Shaarawy after he was very rusty last year when he came back. But I think value for the money, Cristante might be that guy.
Okay. Yeah, I like that shout. So, Steve, before I let you go, and thank you so much for doing it, I always tell people way more of you should be following Steve. He really puts out quality work covering Roma and Chiesa di Totti. So I really liked your guys' articles during the transfer window. I think you guys are very informative. So tell our listeners what's going on at Chiesa di Totti and what type of content we can expect from you guys.
Yeah, so in the next couple of weeks, things are going to start picking up with our preseason coverage. We do our usual every year. We do an under-23 countdown, which will come, you know, from the beginning to middle of August. We usually do a player a day, our top 10. We do our positional previews where we look at best case and worst case scenarios. And then we do a couple roundtable pieces previewing the league and then previewing Roma season coming up. So a lot of preseason work. Obviously, we'll keep up with the transfer work. I think I'm going to record a podcast tomorrow with Sean. He and I, the podcast have been a little less regular of late because, you know, the news has been quiet at times, but that'll be the focus the next couple weeks. And then, you know, before you know it, the season will be here and we'll be back to our regular match day coverage.
Yeah, no, you guys are doing a great job because there's no doubt that this summer, aside from the Italy run, which was fantastic, it's not easy to always pump out content, but you guys always do a great job. So guys, definitely not only follow Steve, check out Chiesa di Totti, really great stuff. And buddy, I look forward to chatting with you during the season. Maybe we will again before the games kick off, but keep up the great work. It's always a pleasure doing shows with you.
Thanks again for having me on, David. Always a pleasure.
Okay, guys, I want to close the podcast. We haven't done movie reviews in a while. I have put it on the outline, but that. This morning, more stuff happened, so we actually have a pretty long show as is. But I do want to talk briefly about the documentary I saw on Anthony Bourdain called The Roadrunner. It was produced by CNN, was produced by the people that he worked with, you know, on his shows on CNN. So I have a lot of thoughts on this. And first off, I have to say that going into the doc, I was like, huh, I wonder if Bourdain's a little bit overrated in the sense of the cultural impact that he's had on society. And look, I'm a big fan of his, and I've seen a lot of people try to mimic his show since he passed away. And then I was like, you know, no one has ever kind of reached his heights. And I'm a big fan of his, and I was, you know, not just because of his TV show. I loved his book, Kitchen Confidential. Anyone who likes Bourdain and has yet to read it, check it out. The audiobook is great. Bourdain reads it. It's very well done. But watching the doc, it really reminded me of why this guy was so popular. I really had a cool vibe on it, kind of had this rocker persona to him. You know, he was a recovering drug addict who still drank and enjoyed life to the fullest, traveled a ton. I thought the documentary showed that really well. It also showed, obviously, the dark side of him. A lot is made on his relationship with his last girlfriend. Asia Argento was the daughter, very famous Italian horror director. So the last part of the movie really focuses on that. Without spoiling it too much, they really imply that that relationship had a lot to do with his eventual suicide. So I strongly recommend this movie. You know, it'll definitely keep you engaged. It flew by in 2 hours. You know, it makes you hungry for life. It makes you hungry for good food. You know, it makes you thirsty for new experiences. You know, it also makes you very sad, because this is something that I always think about, like looking at outside of Bourdain, this handsome, rich guy who had a job traveling the world, eating food, hanging out with friends, learning new cultures. I mean, that just sounded, I think, for a lot of people, like you really couldn't have a better life than that. But despite that, he felt really alone, really isolated. His demons, you know, used his popularity even against them. So, you know, I know today we talked a lot about mental health on this pod, and that's really kind of what I want to end it on. You know, you should never really compare yourself to the outside appearances of other people. Bourdain's really proof of that. I think it's really a great movie. A lot was made on the fact that they used some CGI voiceovers. That didn't really bother me too much, because the CGI, he read all things that he actually wrote. If I really had to nitpick, you know, they talk a lot about his ex-girlfriend and not in a good light. She wasn't interviewed at all. I'd be curious to hear her side of the story. But if you're a fan of Bourdain, I think you'll really, really like this movie. It's called Roadrunner. And again, remember, don't compare yourself to the outside appearances of others. So thanks, everyone. This was a great show. I look forward to chatting with everyone next week.